Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and the greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 57. That takes me back, Dave, as we think about players and numbers, back to the old days. It's Sam Davis back as part of that offensive line with, you know, who you go back to. You can go back to Ray Mansfield and Moon Mullins and Larry Brown and Jim Clack and forgetting one of them, maybe the most that's who I think of when I think of old Steelers with 57. But, Dave, it's Ravens week. We're going to have our buddy John Eisenberg talking about things. And we've obviously got the Tomlin presser to recap. And I would say, in general, the news we got yesterday was pretty good. And the two question marks about the big guys, the important guys, one on each side of the ball in Stephon Tuitt and Ladarius Green, still kind of up in the air.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, the great news was obviously with Tuitt. When you go back and you look at what happened on that play, that sack of Dalton, and you see how that knee twisted. My initial thought was, okay, yeah, that's not going to be a season-ending injury. But real quick, you worry about the MCL kind of sprain and whether or not it's going to be a 2-week injury and that kind of thing. Remember, this is the same Stephon Tuitt that kind of sprained it or did sprain a knee, I think, last year in the game against the Arizona Cardinals. He went on to miss the next two games on top of it. So, you know, keep your fingers crossed. Mike Tomlin sure did kind of paint a positive picture when it came, you know, when it comes to Tuitt during his talk with the media on Tuesday. And as far as the other injuries go, D'Angelo Williams with his knee, Mike Tomlin explained that he was held out of Sunday's game against the Bengals with knee swelling that occurred after practicing last week. The plane flight, the accumulation of the week's work, the surface that they were playing on in Cincinnati all led to that. He expects D'Angelo Williams to be a complete participant this week in practice, and you know, he hinted that be available for the Baltimore Ravens game. You know, more positive news, Darius Heyward-Bey with that foot and Shamarco Thomas. Seemed like Tomlin, look, Shamarco Thomas has been listed as a concussion, I believe, on the injury.
Yeah, well, I had certainly assumed that was the case, and I was actually surprised when he said knee. And I wrote that on Twitter yesterday. As soon as he said that, I was, you know, he hadn't clarified, but we had all assumed that it was that initial concussion that was the issue, but apparently, obviously, it wasn't.
Well, I mean, either that or, you know, Mike Tomlin has made mistakes.
Got confused, right?
Yeah,
right.
With injuries in the past here. So I put kind of, when I wrote up the injury report yesterday after Tomlin talked, I put concussion / knee question mark. So regardless, both could return Sunday, according to Tomlin. They're making strides with it with their injuries. Mike Tomlin said it excited about Darius Heyward-Bey taking another step. He's running full speed in a straight line. Last week, we're going to do some unanticipated directional changes.
Yeah, I did get a chuckle. I got to tell you, I got a chuckle out of exactly that myself.
Unanticipated directional changes. My life has had a lot of unanticipated directional directional changes in it. David, most of them have been related to things not legal, if you know what I mean. Let's see. Hopefully, we have him. Shamarco Thomas could be put in that category as well as he works back from his knee injury. Let's see. We already talked about Stephon Tuitt. Tight end Ladarius Green remains in concussion protocol. The team will follow that process to the letter with him and see where things go from there. Look, this is the most concerning of the group, if you ask me, right now at this point, especially being as how Ladarius has had concussion issues in the past. However, Mike Tomlin was asked if any of his past concussion or concussion history will play a role in anything that happens this week. And even, you know, and I believe him, he was straightforward and said no. You know, they'll follow the letter of the of concussion protocol and see where it goes from there. Keep your fingers crossed. I wouldn't expect Ladarius to do much of anything on Wednesday. I think really Thursday might be the big day with him, but that's just me speculating here. And boy, they could use a guy like Ladarius Green against a team like the Baltimore Ravens. To round out the injury report, Mike Tomlin talked about Ricardo Matthews and Anthony Chiclo both dealing with ankle injuries, but both of them were able to return in that game against the Bengals, and it sounds like while they might be limited early on in a week, it doesn't sound like either are in jeopardy of missing the game against the Ravens.
Yeah, my guess, Dave, is I would say this. D. Will plays. DHBB doesn't play. It's 50-50, and we'll see just a wild card on Ladarius Green. So I would expect everybody else to be up for this one. So, you know, they're trending the right way, but, you know, we've seen how important Ladarius Green has become so quickly in this offense, and we know how important Stephon Tuitt is. So those are the names that are the key ones coming out. So, okay, Dave, you know, you look at this Ravens team, and, you know, we'll talk to John about this, but let me just ask you. they're 2-5 against winning teams. They've won two games on the road. They came back after being down, I think, 20-2 against Cleveland and won. And they beat Jacksonville 19-17. Those two teams are 2-26 combined. Those are the two road wins. They haven't won on the road since September 25th. They are 2-5 against winning teams. The two wins against the Steelers, and they blew out the Dolphins a few weeks ago. The only data point that gives me pause about this team possibly being good is the fact that I saw them play the Dolphins and their offense looked great. Against the Dolphins team, that's obviously not bad. Is this a good team?
I think their defense is. And you go back and you look at what they did to the Dolphins, though, that Dolphins secondary has been kind of shaky all year, right? Didn't they lose the safety that had
Jones, right?
Rashad Jones, right? They lost him an injury that he suffered in the Steelers game, if memory serves me. This is plain and simple. I didn't put a lot of stock in them rolling up 38 points on the Dolphins, I guess is what I'm trying to say with their offense. Their defense, though, has been more than competent all year, and I think, you know, several times over the last several weeks I said, boy, give me that defense of theirs. They can get after the quarterback. They can effectively shut down the run. You know, we hear Keith Butler talk all the time about, and Dick LeBeau for all those years, make him as one-dimensional as possible. Shut down a run on first down. Get those unsuccessful running plays on first down, and you put opposing offenses in peculiar situations where you kind of dictate or know what's going to happen with them. This is that kind of defense. So they have, I will say this, the Ravens have a defense that could help them win a few playoff games. Now, is this overall, in other words, cover up keep the offense hanging around like they've done several times this year? The question is, though, you know, is the Ravens offense good enough to win to counteract a misstep in the playoffs? No, I don't believe so. But this is a Ravens team that's good enough to win a game or two in the playoffs. Plain and simple, and it's because of their defense. And they got an experienced quarterback in Joe Flacco. That counts. That counts for something.
They do. And, you know, you watch if you watch the end of the Eagles game, the interception he threw with 5 minutes to go when they're up, whatever they were up at the time, 10. It was as bad as Dalton's interception, maybe worse.
Is that fan base blasting Joe Flacco on the road this year as much as Steeler fans are and people like us are blasting Ben Roethlisberger for the road this year?
I haven't noticed. Are his splits as dramatic as Ben's?
Well, only he's got more interceptions on the road than he does touchdowns. He has something like, what, five touchdowns on the road. However, they've only played what have they played?
Six road games.
Six road games, right? So, you know, and how many did the Steelers close out at home?
At home.
So they played their eight road games already, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, his splits aren't as, you know, his old time quarterback rating isn't as pretty as it is at home. Talking about Flacco, obviously.
Yeah. I well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, Ben, and look, we'll get into the Pro Bowl and everything else. But, you know, the thing about Ben's season is it's just, unfortunately, his bad games have been awful. He's had 3 weeks during the season where he's been, you know, amongst the three or four worst quarterbacks in the league by QBR. If you look at the Eagles game, the Dolphins game, and which one was it? The Buffalo game. So, Flacco, plain and simple for me, is Flacco's going to have to win this game for Baltimore. And for the Steelers, the approach is come out throwing the football. I mean, they're not going to abandon the run. They're going to try and be balanced. But I would take the approach they took against Buffalo, and I would be throwing, particularly if Jimmy Smith is not playing, I would come out and I would be winging it from the get-go. And I really think if the Steelers can get ahead of this game, if they can get a double-digit lead, you almost guarantee victory. The only way, really, that I see the Steelers losing this game, Dave, is if they turn it over two or three times. If they don't turn it over, I just don't think Baltimore is good enough offensively to overcome the fact that the Steelers are as they have been at home, they're likely to – I mean, it's really – I mean, we have to say it. They're likely to put up 20 points. And I just – I feel like, you know, it's the same thing. The Steelers are 9-0 when they give up 20 or less and 0-5 otherwise. I don't feel like Baltimore is going to score 21, and I feel like the Steelers will. So it's that simple. Get ahead of them early and then go to the run. But, you know, make it so that Baltimore has to throw the ball, make them one-dimensional, and get after Flacco.
Well, you need to make Flacco definitely – Flacco to me has become Captain Checkdown this year, you know. If you look at his air yards and his average, you know, per attempt air yards, 3.36. That puts him behind Matthew Stafford, behind Brock Osweiler, behind Nick Foles, behind Blaine Gabbert, behind Matt Schaub, Hoyer, all those guys. I mean, he's way down. He's just a little better than Alex Smith and Carson Wentz. And those two guys are talking about Smith and Wentz. Their games are almost identical right now, you know, as far as the style that they play with that West Coast offense. And I guess really when you consider the kind of offense they're asking Flacco to run right now, it's reasonable why he has a 3.36 air yards per attempt. And when you look at a guy like Ben Roethlisberger per se, he has a 4.10 number, which is probably right in the middle of the league. Now, a lot of those checkdowns to guys like Bell and you know, the short passes over the middle and that kind of stuff there. But there's quite – it might not seem like there's a big difference between 4.10 and 3.36, but really it is. Leading the league as far as guys that have had a lot of attempts this year is a guy like Jameis Winston, who goes down the field quite a bit, 4.86 average air yards per attempt. And then you got a guy like Matt Ryan right behind him at 4.84 numbers. So stop that run early if you can, and on the early downs, and get Flacco to throw down the field and hopefully in the middle of the field as well too. And I think if you do that, you can get off. You know, if you go back, I went back and rewatched that game against the Ravens, I think 4 or 5 days ago, David. You know, outside, they had what? The two big plays, right? They had a 95-yard touchdown to Mike Wallace that
right.
that probably should have been at most a 20-yard catch. And as Mike Tomlin says, then you have a lot of blades of grass to defend there. And then you had another big catch and run by Steve Smith on a poor angle, poor tackle attempt. Great stiff arm by Steve Smith in that game. You had to block punt as well, where you know, we broke that down saying, well, what the hell, why the hell they let that guy run free off the edge there. Outside of that, I mean, yeah, at one point they led, what, 21 to what, was it nothing or 21-7 in that game?
I think it was 21-0, right? I mean, they blocked the punt, and I think that made it 21-0, and then the Steelers decide to air it out, and boom, boom, it's 21-14.
And don't forget, this was how long was this after Ben coming off of the injury as well? You know,
it was his first week back.
You know, so I mean, probably a lot of reason why they did stick to the run early in that game. I guess what I'm trying to say was that game was a lot closer. You know, even though it ended up a 7-point game, you rewatch that game, you don't come away with the feeling that boy, the Ravens really took it to the Steelers in that game.
No, you don't. But you also never felt like the Steelers were going to win because they couldn't do anything offensively till the end. I mean. I agree with your sense that you didn't feel like the Steelers got dominated, but because they were, I mean, what would they do? The first 10 drives, they had 9 punts and a turnover or something, right? I mean, it was a joke. It was 3-and-out city. I mean, it was just 3-and-out, 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 3-and-out. And I think that's when things finally changed in terms of their in-game adjustments and what they did. I look at that game as the turning point in the season because that's when defensively they started to attack for the first time all year. Up until that point, they were more passive, and they went after the Ravens. I mean, you remember, obviously the defense only gave up 14 points in that game, and that's been kind of the MO since that point in time, where, you know, obviously there's exception. I mean, the Dallas game was the exception, but you know, more or less since that point in time, the defense has been attacking and been effective. And, you know, as soon as Ben, you know, showed in the fourth quarter that, you know, he could air it out and he was ready to go, things have been better from there. So, I do look at that game as you know, the Steelers finally getting things on track defensively and offensively they pick things up from there. So the Ravens team doesn't scare me if the Steelers get ahead. If they game plan and turn, you know, if they don't turn the ball over, I think the Steelers win this game.
You know, you go back to that game as well too. Remember, that's the game that Darius Hayward Bay went down with the foot injury in the first half. You know, Sammy Coates missed several, at least one right down the seam, right? You know, a key touchdown in there. Late in the game there. What did he have? 40, let's see. Sammy played 45 snaps in that game. And then that started the downcline after that, right? I mean, back to the, it seemed like right after that, the very, very low numbers as far as snap counts go for him. They need to come out throwing, in my opinion, especially if Jimmy Smith does not play in this game. I think you got to find out
So we agree.
What those other young corners have in this game here. I just think you have to attack, and then, you know, obviously you have Le'Veon Bell to check down in there, and you can't totally abandon the run. But I would like to try, when you do try to run the football, I would like to try to test the Ravens out on the edge. I would like to try to see some of these screens early to try to draw up these corners to have to play those as well too, because I think that could factor into a deep strike later on in the game. But I mean, there's no reason not to feel optimistic about this game as a Steelers fan.
I'm with you. Okay, let's talk about what Mike Tomlin said. And to me, the most baffling thing was it was the Sammy Coates, the kick return thing, just because I didn't get it. I asked him about, you know, why Justin Gilbert hasn't gotten an opportunity on kick returns, and he said, because we're pleased with Sammy. And then he started to, you know, go to another question, and I said, and Toussaint? And he said, well, he's our off returner. He's the frontline blocker. But the reality is Coates has returned 6 kicks and Toussaint's returned 12. So, Dave, doesn't it make sense to do one of about 5 different things? Either one, have those guys line up in an eye and either just go, you know, change sides as the kicker's approaching it, just each pick a side so that they don't know exactly where Coates is every time. Or two, just stay that way till the ball's kicked, because I imagine Coates can make up the distance, which it would be at most kind of half the field. And you would think generally most kickers aren't going to kick it outside the numbers. So you just basically have about 10 yards to cover while the ball's in the air, which shouldn't be any problem for him. Or three, get Toussaint the hell off the field and or move him up and put Gilbert in there and you know, have something else going on. It just it seemed to me to not be the smartest answer.
How about four? Use neither of them.
Well, right.
You know, look, I mean, we'll have to see. You know, is a guy like DeMarcus? Yeah, I just can't in a big in Ravens Steelers. I can't see a guy like DeMarcus Ayers being thrown out there to return kickoffs. Same goes with Justin Gilbert because now he hasn't done it. Mike Tomlin views this, I think, as if it's not overly broken, don't try to fix it. And I guess, I mean, that's the best way to it's not great. It's not awful. Just leave it alone. It'll be fine. Kind of thing. And, you know, so I would have liked to seen Justin Gilbert back there more up until this point, but it hasn't happened. You know, people don't want us to talk about Sammy Coates on the podcast, but Mike Tomlin talked about him yesterday as a kick returner. Look, was it good to see a 44-yard return? Yeah. How much of that was, you know, a missed tackle or two in there? A little of it, I think.
Sure. I mean, he could have been down at the 20.
I didn't view it as a, wow, what a great return by Sammy Coates, I'll tell you that.
It wasn't anything like Erickson's return.
And Emmanuel Sanders has the longest return for the Steelers dating back to 2013, and that was only 2 yards longer than Sammy Coates. I one of those things that just you look at, you don't want to address or talk about. Even in my, I'm more scared of what happened with Alex Erickson on the kick return in that game. And God bless Chris Boswell for coming up with a shoestring kind of slip up there. Let me ask you, Danny Smith need to go after the end of the season? Did we get a lot of questions about that?
Yeah, I don't think it'll happen, but if you're picking a coach, I think Richard Mann's done after this year. And
by his own accord, though, Richard Mann.
With some health issues, yeah.
Right. Danny Smith.
That has been speculated. That's just me guessing. Danny, I think there'll be a conversation. I don't see Mike firing him, to be honest with you. But if he did, it wouldn't surprise me, put it that way.
Yeah, it could probably go either way.
I mean, there is the excuse of Shemarco and DHB being down for half the season as, you know, two of their best special teams players. Now, you got to make up for it. That's what coaches are supposed to do. But the coverage, I thought the coverage units were great the first half of the year. They haven't been great the second half of the year.
You know what? Just tell those guys that the ball's kicked into the damn end zone and kneel down. Just take the 25 yards, is my opinion.
Yeah, and 538.com did a whole thing on this on kick returns and you know, who should be taking it out and when. And basically that is the right answer, is if you're in the end zone, you're better off taking the 25.
And then just go from there. At least you're not starting at your own 18 or, you know, or worse, you know. So, interesting comments, you know, I Tomlin about the coverage units. A little bit of negligence by us, but a lot of execution by them. I have no issue with praising the other team. Heck, we do it on the podcast quite a bit. Sometimes you got to remember that the other team and players are paid to play the game, and this is the NFL. But sometimes I'd like to see Tomlin point the finger back at his own way a little bit.
Yeah, I think he's pretty good about blaming the coaching staff when things don't go well. I mean, I'll tell you honestly, I was a little surprised how much he complimented Erickson, because two things happened on that. One is they got the hell blocked out of him, so that was point one. I mean, it wasn't like Erickson beat anybody. I mean, it was so. Yeah, I'm with you on that part. And two is.
Well, here's where he praised him. He says he praised Erickson, did a nice job of not only returning the ball, but setting up the structure of the return to draw the coverage unit, you know, away and then burst into the perimeter. How come Danny Smith can't teach that?
Right. And the other thing about it is if you watch it, Dave, and I can't tell exactly, but when I watched it live, my initial reaction was, what the hell is Artie Burns doing? Why isn't he turning and running with that guy? Because he could catch him. I mean, the guy's got 3 yards on him, and I understand he's going full speed. But Artie Burns, I mean, the guy's also already run 50 yards. Artie Burns turns and goes after him, and he's got a chance, and he was out of the play.
Well, I think if you look at that, too, by the end zone view, right, he's got to make sure he doesn't give up that edge, though, right? He's got to take on that block, and isn't that what he did initially on the outside? I mean,
I was surprised he didn't. And somebody said, somebody else's opinion was he got held. I was just surprised he didn't disengage more quickly because he had to turn and chase the guy.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, that job is to make sure nobody gets to the outside of you there. So, I mean, I'll have to look at it a little bit closer.
Okay.
What else did Mike say that intrigued you?
Well, I thought he had a decent answer to what – I mean, we knew what the answer was going to be, and I was critical of how they managed things at the end of the first half because I thought they were overly conservative. Now, he pointed out, look, they were moving the ball on us, and we didn't want to give it back. I know – we knew that was the answer because they played that way. I just felt like once they got the first down at the 27 and came out of the two-minute warning, that they had put themselves at a lot less risk. So you're at the two-minute warning, you're at the 27-yard line with first down. That's no longer the 10. At the 10, I had no problem with what they did. But first down at the 27, they didn't play quickly enough in my mind because, you know, they had all three timeouts. They were coming out of the two-minute warning. And my problem was that after the play at the two-minute warning, they snapped the ball in the next play at 1:33. That's just not fast enough. You know, you just can't take 27 seconds to get a playoff if you're really trying to score a touchdown. And the way it worked out is, it's not they got stopped on that drive. They ran out of time. They went into the locker room with a timeout in their pocket. They spiked the ball, so they lost a down. So, you know, it ended up being fourth down, but they had to waste a down to spike the ball because of time issues. So, you know, look, it's not a killer. They did get points. That was significant. They were getting the ball to start the second half, so that was significant. But I didn't think they handled it well. And then at the same time, kind of following up on that, what they did at the end of the game was, I thought, fantastic, as we talked about on Monday. And it was interesting when he finished talking about that drive and basically said, just, we don't want to give the ball back. I said, was Ben making the play calls? He had a very succinct answer to that. No. So that's Todd Haley making those aggressive play calls, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, I had no issue with it, really. I mean, look, the key thing there is and don't forget, we'll save that for a little bit later, but I mean, I had no issue. Look, you always judge these things by results, right? You know, tend to.
No, I don't actually. No, that's the whole point, is I don't judge them by results bad analysis.
What I meant by that is you, meaning most people, judge these things by, like, the third and one play calls, right?
Right, sure, right. If it works, it's great. If it doesn't, it's the worst call.
Right, and fake punts. What I mean by you is yins.
Right.
People in general judge these things by this. I think you have to look deeper inside of it. I mean, are you in a third and one? Are you looking at a stacked box? Do you have a matchup outside, a one-on-one that you'd like? While that might be the case with Haley, you know, calling those plays, let's not forget that there are checks built into that as well, too.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, so, I mean, it's just,
I was just surprised he was demonstrative. You know, generally he says we're all involved in the play calls. I was surprised that was not his answer.
Yeah, and you probably, if you had Roethlisberger on the stand right now, you know, and asking him how much of that was him, I bet he says, well, you know, that's me making a lot of the call. You know how this kind of battle goes back and forth. But between the two sides and play calls.
Did you see, sorry to interrupt. I'm just seeing this. Maybe you saw this earlier. Ryan Succop is the AFC special teams player of the week.
Yeah, I did see that. And
how is that possible?
I tweeted out that, Boswell got the shaft there. And then, Boswell also posted this morning that he, received a random drug test. this morning. So that must be all them 49 yarders that he kicked in that game, and him being able to make that that shoestring tackle as well too. So yeah, and Succop, all he had was what, the game winner from
53,
and he had what, one out of field goal in the game, right?
I mean, that's really surprising. That, I mean, you know, Boswell had a historic day and made a tackle. So
Yeah, a little bit of a snub there not a little bit, a lot of a snub there.
Dave, speaking of snubs, was there anything else? You know what? By the way, we haven't talked about our buddy Craig Oxane, but was there anything else in the in a press conference that jumped out at you?
No. I mean, the adjustments. I mean, I like Tomlin's answer to the adjustment questions, but it's not like I learned anything new there.
Right. I liked his answer, too. I thought that was pretty interesting. Hey, Steeler Nation, mortgage rates are currently near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out podcast listeners. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois residential mortgage licensee, equal housing lender. And Craig has promised that he's got a holiday sale on rates right now for Steeler fans. So check him out if you're interested. Dave, the Pro Bowl. I got to tell you, and here's the thing about Pro Bowl. You know, we're looking at it with somewhat black and gold lenses, and we see the Steelers more than just about anybody. You know, if you're a fan of a team, you see them more than anybody else in the country, and the national guys don't see them nearly as much. But the national guys see the other teams more than most people. So when you talk about who should have made it, you got to make sure you're talking about who shouldn't have made it as well, because there are two sides of the argument. And when I looked at it, I had actually said on the show yesterday, obviously Bell and AB are locks. I thought Pouncey would make it, even though DeCastro maybe hasn't had as good a season as last year. He's not going to be first team all pro, but he'll probably make the Pro Bowl. And that they all made it. I have to say I was a little bit surprised Ben made it. And he would be the guy, you know, offensively that I would have put a question mark to. I thought Shazier would make it, and I thought Mitchell might be deserving and wouldn't make it. What was your expectation versus what actually happened?
I was slightly surprised that DeCastro made it, to be honest with you. Surprised a little that Ben made it, but when you look around the AFC, right? I mean, who?
that was it. Who's the third guy, right?
Right. Who's the third guy? So, you know, not surprised at Pouncey, not surprised at Brown, not surprised at Bell. Shazier, I just think essentially you could make an argument that Shazier missed five games, right? I mean, even though three on paper, I mean, he went out of the Eagles game early.
Although he did come back and play. I mean, you know, who knows why at that point, but he probably missed half that game.
He didn't play a lot. And then in the game upon his return, which I believe was against the Patriots, is that right? Played like 30 something snaps in there. Not that snaps are the end all do all. Look, if you talk about him as a Pro Bowl snub, you have to talk about Lawrence Timmons then.
Yeah, I think it's,
right,
it's
I
very
mean,
hard.
Right or wrong?
I think Timmons has been really good the second half of the season. I think it's really hard to make the Pro Bowl and then be viewed as aging and on the backside and then make it again. After you haven't made it for a couple of years. So it's one of those, you know, look, obviously this isn't pure who played the best. This is a lot on reputation and, you know, how you're perceived. So I think your point is valid. I didn't think there was ever a chance he was going to make it.
Right. And that's the case that I'm not overly shocked that Shazier didn't either, okay? 98 total tackles for Timmons, 69 for Ryan Shazier. Throw the sacks out. I mean, even though they're two apart, Ryan Shazier has 3.5. Timmons has 2.5. Tackles for loss. 4 for Timmons, 8 for Shazier. Now, I believe they count sacks as tackles for loss, right? Or am I
yes,
wrong?
Yes.
Wrong.
No,
there?
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Keep that in mind. Quarterback hits. Timmons has 8. Shazier has 7. Timmons has 1 more interception than Shazier. Passes defense. Shazier has 2 more. One has, you know, Shazier has 7. Timmons has 5. The only really thing that jumps way, way out here is forced fumbles. Shazier has 3. Timmons 0. I think because what you asked those guys to do and the stats related to that, I think if you want to talk about Shazier's shock that he didn't make it, then you have to say that you're shocked Lawrence Timmons didn't make it either. That's my view on it. And had Ryan Shazier played all every game this year, he obviously, I think, would then be in that conversation there. And I think if Ryan Shazier does stay healthy moving forward into next year and can play all 16 games, not only is he going to be talked about as a Pro Bowl candidate, he's going to be talked about as potentially a Defensive Player of the Year candidate as well, in my opinion. He's that explosive when he's on the field, and we've pointed that out several times when it comes to him. Mike Mitchell, just, you know, yeah, but I mean, look at the competition around him as well. And
also, it's worth pointing out that the Steelers' defense wasn't perceived to be good coming into the season, and they haven't been particularly good the past couple of years. So they've got that takes a whole year to overcome. I mean, they've got to be good, you know, the rest of this year and into the playoffs. And then, you know, if they're good to start next year, they'll get that recognition. Because this is certainly a changing of the guard, and I think the perception of the Steelers' defense is changing as well. But, look, it was our perception too. So this isn't – I'm not saying anybody got anything wrong. The reality was that's what the Steelers' defense was.
When you're a safety too, and you're talking about Pro Bowl, you better have, you know, quite a few – you better have a handful of interceptions. Some forced fumbles, and in other words, people don't look at safeties coming up and making those run fills and those run stops. You know, it really seems to be slanted, name and statistical wise. Poor Mike Mitchell's probably always going to be one or two guys that you talk about. Well, he probably should have made it, but here's why he didn't. Kind of thing that goes along with it. Let me ask you this. We got this from a Twitter follower, David. Josh H. Weiss. Better Steelers career, Ferrier or Timmons? Hello?
Well, I guess the answer is Timmons, right? Because Ferrier didn't play his whole career with the Steelers.
Yeah, but he played a whole heck of a lot of it, though.
I mean, I think they're very similar. I think it's a great question, but I would just, Timmons is 10 years now. How many years did Ferrier play for the Steelers?
Well, about that, right?
Was it that many? I was thinking 7 or 8.
Let's see here. 2002 is when he signed with the Steelers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 for Ferrier.
Okay, so great question. I don't have an answer that I think is right, so I'll just flip a coin.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a right answer too. That's why I told the fellow that who I sat on the Terrible Podcast. So, listeners, better Steelers career so far or overall right now, Ferrier or Timmons? The Terrible Podcast at Steeler or the Terrible Podcast at gmail.com. One other thing from Caleb email. Caleb, I'm not even going to try to pronounce your last name. Hey guys, love and appreciate the podcast. Can you guys dial back to talk about Coach's playtime just a bit? Here's another one. But focus on the bad decision making a kickoff returns. I believe we did that. Let's see. Do you think Ben's production drop off from last year is from our average wide receiver production, or is it father time settling in for Ben? I don't think it's father time. I think injuries in the middle of the year played a little bit of a role in it. Wide receiver production. Look, Sammy Coates hasn't been great middle of the season, and Ben's missed that.
I think he hasn't played quite as well, and he has, you know, didn't have Ladarius Green for half the year, didn't have Marcus Wheaton for any of the year. So, you know, a combination of factors. I don't think it's one clear thing.
And he says, and finally, this has been killing him. Honestly think our play calling on 2-point conversions is ridiculous. We have a top three back, arguably the best in the league. And in other words, so many words, Caleb thinks they should be running it more inside of, or when they're doing the 2-point conversions. And, you know,
hey, mix things up. Look, it hasn't worked, so it's open to criticism.
Yeah, I don't think you can just go a straight running play. That's why you hear them talk about all the time, well, we have these two-point plays in our pocket type of thing. Remember, this is from the two. Yeah, I mean, would it hurt to run it occasionally? But I think I wonder how many times in total, David, league-wide, and maybe that's something to look at. How many times does a team pass versus run on a two-point conversion?
Yeah, I would guess it's 80-20.
Yeah, I would guess it's high as well, too. Caleb, thanks for the email.
A couple things, Dave, just to wrap up the Pro Bowl discussion. I think they did a really good job on the AFC to just, I mean, that's not to criticize the NFC. I just, you can maybe look at a guy or two, but they're guys like Lorenzo Alexander, who you would never expect, would never be in the conversation, who got rewarded for his production this year. Maybe Geno Atkins shouldn't have been a starter, but, you know, that Jarrell Casey's been a beast in the interior line. Mack and Wake have been fantastic. Clowney has had the best year of his career. I mean, you go through the names. I mean, offensively, the receivers, I think they drilled it. Just across the board, Taylor Lewan's been great for the Titans. We know, you know, Yonda and Assembly are kind of layups at the guard position. I think they got the tight ends right. How about this? And you know, obviously there are factors here, but neither Gronk nor Jimmy Graham made the Pro Bowl. Gronk because of injury. Jimmy Graham was playing pretty well. Interesting group of four that made it on both sides. I really don't look at the AFC and go, wow, they missed here.
Biggest snub for the Steelers Pro Bowl-wise, Marcus Gilbert, Mike Mitchell, or Ryan Shazier?
I mean, I'm going to – just because we see them play every week, I think Shazier is the best player of the three and the most likely to make it. Marcus Gilbert's never going to make it, unfortunately. I mean, just – they're going to take left tackles. We had the same conversation last year. I think Gilbert's been a tick off where he was last year. He's been very good. It's not a knock on him, but it's really tough to make it at right tackle.
I think Gilbert's been exceptional. I think the three games obviously hurt him. Your comment about the national media really doesn't get to see the Steelers. I mean, how many games?
Not get to see him. They don't watch them with the same level of detail that we do.
Okay. All right. Because the Steelers have been on TV quite a bit this season. So, how many major media guys go back and watch the All 22? How many major media guys that cover the Steelers go back and watch the game a second time?
You mean local media guys?
Yeah.
Most of them. Most of the beat writers. In fact, I would be close to saying all the beat writers.
How many watch the All 22?
I don't know if asking those guys to, you know, shell out $100. I don't know. I mean, I know Mark Caboli does, and I know a couple other guys do. I won't say the other guys don't. I just don't know the answer.
You can watch the original viewing and then a replay of it, the TV, a replay viewing, and still miss a ton of stuff.
Of course.
You know, that's why I mean, watch, you know, it.
For those who've never seen an All 22, it's basically the coach's tape, and they give it two views. There's no sound. They just give it to you from the side, and then they give it to you from the end zone. So you see, obviously, All 22. You see all 22 players on the field. So you can see away from the ball. You can watch things away from the ball. You can see schemes. You can see on a running play, you know, how the defensive backfield sets up that you wouldn't see on television. You can see, play design better. I mean, it's pretty straightforward stuff, but you get a much better idea of, you know, how an offense is attacking a defense, how the defense is scheming, that type of stuff.
All right. I've rambled enough. Let's introduce John.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got our buddy John Eisenberg. He's up next. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. And as we do every Wednesday, we're pleased to be joined by a beat writer covering the opposing team. And of course, it's Steelers Ravens, and that means we're joined by our buddy John Eisenberg, who you can follow on Twitter at BeMoreEisenberg. You can check him out on Twitter at Ravens.com. John, as always, great to be with you. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you guys and all your listeners, and it's great to be on.
John, as Dave said before we got on air, this could be the first of two meetings in a very short period of time. What's the environment like in the locker room and around Baltimore? I was on Baltimore radio yesterday with a guy who said, you know, surprisingly, the fans don't seem to be quite as enthusiastic as maybe the team and people in the organization.
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair assessment. The fans, I think, have had a hard time sort of buying in this year a little bit. And I think that's what happens. I think when you lose four games in a row in the middle of the season and lose to the Jets and, you know, you're 3-4 going into your bye, I think the fans, I mean, you know, you could easily make the argument that they're spoiled. That's for sure. I mean, they've had a lot of success around here. But I just think the fans haven't loved what they've seen. The offense that has just never really been able to get into gear except for one game against the Dolphins a couple weeks ago. Now, since the bye, the Ravens have won 5 out of 7 games. And the only two games they've lost are to the Patriots and the Cowboys, who are the number one seed in each conference right now. So they have come on to a degree. That's for sure. But, you know, it's just like, for instance, they beat the Eagles on Sunday, but, you know, they almost blew the game just catastrophically, honestly. And I think the fans are just like, oh, my gosh, you know, they're just not quite buying in all the way.
Yeah, John, I mean, it's interesting because the Steelers went through their own 4-game losing streak, as you're well aware. Their recent losses are Dallas and New England as well. One of the things that I look at is the Ravens are 2-5 against winning teams. Their last win on the road, you know, it's circumstantial, obviously, but the last win on the road is September 25th. The two teams they beat on the road are 2-26 combined. you can throw all sorts of stats out there. Let me just simply ask you, do you think they're a good football team?
A good football team. Let me tell you, if the question is, are they a great football team? The answer is definitely not. There's just too much going wrong. You know, the offense just can't get it in gear often enough. A good football team, I'm certainly not going to do this with an exclamation point, but I would say, yeah, okay. How about that? They're a good football team, pretty good football team. I mean, you know, they have beaten losing teams. That's 6 of their wins this year. They do have a pretty good defense that keeps them in just about every game. And the offense, has been the problem spot this year. But they do seem to come up with some points. Before Flacco threw an interception in the red zone, which everyone is still upset about, it caused that Eagle game to get close on Sunday. They were getting ready to go in to score over 30 points in that game. And so the offense does have some production on its side now and then. But, you know, you put all the pieces together. The MVP of the team this year is Justin Tucker, the kicker. So
by the way, Joe, just sorry to interrupt, but has Justin Tucker been around long enough to say he is the best kicker who's ever played? I'm serious. I said it on my show yesterday. Yeah. I mean,
he may be. It's unbelievable. Every week, I mean, I sit next to the visiting writers every week in the press box, and they just are like slack-jawed, you know. He comes in, he kicks a 54-yarder. It's his 9th in a row, his 10th in a row. It clears the bar by 10 yards. Into the wind, with the wind. It's incredible. He's really incredible. And, I he's an amazing weapon. I mean, the Ravens are on their own 40-yard line. Their theory is, we get 20 yards, we've got 3 points. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that defense, I would say a little bit better than pretty good with them. I've been following the Ravens defense, all season, and you're right. They certainly have kept the offense hanging around in several of these games. However, the last two games against the Patriots and the Eagles, we've seen a few cracks in that defense. What's the overall consensus of why those cracks have opened up?
Well, one thing for sure that it's opened up, although this was not a factor against the Eagles on Sunday, is Jimmy Smith is injured again. Jimmy Smith's had 3 injuries this year. He's their top cornerback, really by far. And, when he's in there, they have a pretty good pass defense. But he's out, and it's a high ankle sprain. I'm doubting he'll play on Sunday. And so certainly the Patriots were able to take advantage of that in the Monday night game. Every time he's gone out, the pass defense has really sagged. Now, so, you know, the pass defense, it's got a pretty good – it's a top 10 pass defense statistically, but it is vulnerable, especially when Smith is out. Now, what's happened really out of nowhere on Sunday, the Eagles just blew away the run defense, which the Ravens are number one in the league in run defense. That's their stock and trade. It has been for years. stop the run, at least make people sweat for it. And the Eagles just blasted through them, almost 180 yards. And so that's alarming. You know, I think when the Ravens can't stop the run, their defense is in trouble. And so, you know, that was a crack. And it really came out of nowhere. And John Harbaugh said it's a scheme thing. It was a scheme thing. They didn't defense it well, and they'll fix it. But I'm sure the Steelers are liking what they saw on film.
Is Zach Gore the best player in the NFL that nobody outside of Baltimore, I mean, that most people out of Baltimore don't know about? And do you consider him a Pro Bowl snub?
I would say several people mentioned that to me on Twitter, and Zach's had a great year. He leads the team in tackles, top 10 in the league in tackles. CJ Mosley's place beside him got it instead. And I do kind of get that. Mosley's more of a playmaker. Zach has just had an awesome year. He's an undrafted free agent. He's the next Bart Scott. There's no doubt. And he's only going to get better. He has faltered a little bit lately, you know, in pass coverage in particular. And so it's a great year for him. And, you know, he's an enthusiastic player. The Ravens love him. But Mosley's bigger, better against the run. And I think that's why he made the Pro Bowl.
When we talk back on the offensive side of things, John, I was talking yesterday about how the Steelers, you know, their game plan down in Baltimore, they were too conservative, obviously, in how they approached the game. And we can debate whether that was because Ben was coming off injury or not. But they kept trying to run it into Brandon Williams, and it wasn't effective. They end up airing it late and get back in the game, but not enough. And one of the things I have thought all year long, and to your point that you discussed what we've seen over the past couple of weeks, is I just kind of thought the Eagles' offense has been impotent all year. And then I sat and watched the Dolphins game, and I was like, oh, my God. I mean, if that's their offense, then they're a Super Bowl-caliber team. So what's the difference between what we saw that Sunday and what we've seen most Sundays?
Well, that Sunday against Miami, certainly the Dolphins came in. I didn't think well prepared for that game at all. They just left the middle of the field wide open all day long, just almost beyond belief. You know, they just Flacco just repeatedly crossing routes, tight ends, everybody was open back there behind the backers, and they just took it all day. They didn't try to run the ball in that game, and they didn't need to run the ball because that was all passing that day. They barely ran the ball, scored 38 points, and you know, beat up on the Dolphins, who are looking like a playoff team at this point. So what we have not seen, what we saw that day that we haven't seen, is just the crispness in that passing attack. You know, it was an anomaly of the game. The Ravens need to run the ball more than they did that day, almost every week. Now, that was kind of a freak game. They need to run it more. They'll certainly need to run it on Sunday. But the passing attack was what was so great that day. I mean, Flacco was sharp. He's not been super sharp this year. You know, he's made some mistakes. He's been inaccurate at times. And that day, it was just great rhythm. You can see that they are a rhythm offense. You know, they just coming out of the no huddle almost, it's better. Just pop, 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 get it going, quick passes, and it goes. But that day they had it. We just haven't seen that nearly often enough this year.
With Terrence West this week, I mean, are we going to see him up the middle a ton in this game? Is that going to be the Ravens' game plan? Because Flacco hasn't been overly great on the road this year. What does he have? Something like five touchdown passes on the road this year. His deep ball is not, you know, definitely not as accurate as we've seen in the past. He's never, in my opinion, been a great deep ball quarterback, but I mean, he seems to really be off target this year. I mean, is this just lace him up and try to blow the Steelers' defensive line off the football this week?
Probably to some degree, yeah. I mean, the offensive line, we haven't even talked about it, is one thing that has gone pretty well. They had tons of injuries. And they were just getting together. They were dealing with all that when the Ravens and Steelers played the first time. They've had stability there the last month. Marshall Yanda, who's their best lineman by far, has a shoulder injury. He couldn't play, you know, in terms of his leverage and the angles at right guard where he's always played. So, he's an amazing player. And he moved to left guard just so he could get on the field because he doesn't use his injured shoulder as much. He's been really good. And at left guard, a position he's never played. And he's playing next to Ronnie Stanley, who's the sixth pick in the draft. And was just coming back from injury. James Harrison ate him up the first time they played. Stanley is playing a lot better now, and he's an elite player, and I think he's going to be going forward. So they do have some things going for him on the offensive line. They've had the same line out there for a month, and I do think they're going to try to run the ball. Terrence West and Kenneth Dixon as well. Dixon has had some nice moments here. He's a fourth-round pick. He shows a lot of promise. The first guy almost never brings him down. And I think you're going to see a 1-2 punch from those guys on Sunday.
What's the overall consensus right now where Perriman is at in his development? He'll make some big catches, and then, you know, you look at some of his route running, you know, not as crisp. I mean, is he just a hot and cold kind of player? Are they struggling? Is he struggling any with still learning NFL offenses?
I don't think he's struggling with the offenses, no. I think he is struggling to just find his feet in the NFL. I think the general consensus to a degree, you know, I know the fans are disappointed because, you know, he just hasn't been a big factor. He's incredibly fast and athletic and has made a couple of great plays. He's also dropped a lot of balls on shorter routes. And looked a little timid doing that. And that's something he came out of college with a drop problem. So he's not been a huge factor. But, of course, this is a guy that was just dealt with numerous injuries, starting his career. He's had a lot of setbacks. And so I think the Ravens are looking at it as, you know, this is his rookie year, which it is. This is his rookie year. He's had to sort of gather himself a little bit. And you're seeing that rookie stuff going on this year. They're hoping for better things going forward.
John, just in terms of thinking about how the game's going to play out, it would seem that both teams, to be successful, are going to have to throw the ball. And the Steelers, obviously, are going to try to be somewhat balanced and definitely try to run the ball. You talked about the Ravens, you know, needing to run the ball to be successful. When the Steelers, during this win streak, there haven't been many teams who have been able to run the ball. The Bengals were able to do it early in the game last Sunday, and then the Steelers closed it down. We don't really know what the status is of Stephon Tuitt, but when I've seen them be successful, it has been throwing the ball. Are they willing to stick with the run? And when we saw the Steelers do it in Baltimore, obviously that was the wrong move. How do you expect the Ravens to attack the Steelers?
Well, sticking with the run has been a major issue here all year. Flacco is second in the league in pass attempts, which is just not right. That's the only way to put it. The lack of abandoning the running game got Mark Trestman fired after week five. Marty Morningwig has done a lot of the same stuff. The offense has gone up a tick under Morningwig, but there's still days when there's just no running game. And just sort of give up on the running game. Certainly, it's happened way too often. They've lacked balance. So, you know, will they do it again? What I have seen this year is when the first few runs don't go well, there's a lot more. The ball's in the air a lot, easily discouraged on the ground. So it's hard for me to say, very honestly, how they are going to attack this game. This certainly the first time. The Ravens ran into a brick wall. They won that game. They were up 21-0 at one point before holding on and winning by 7. But if you look at it, the Ravens stuck with the run that day, and it went nowhere, nothing. They averaged, I think, less than 2 yards per carry. So, but they did stick with it, I guess, because they were ahead.
Right.
But, sort of in hindsight said, boy, we should have stuck with it. So it's hard for me to say exactly how they will attack the game, but the ball's in the air this year from the Ravens. So you're going to see that. You're not going to see it ground and pound. It just doesn't happen.
John, everybody here in Pittsburgh is focused singularly on this game. And it's just kind of a given that the Steelers will beat Baltimore. It's not that way for the Ravens. I mean, they've got to win both these games, and they play the Steelers on the road, and then they play the Bengals on the road. Are they going to win both these games?
Going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough for the reasons that you've outlined. They've lost four in a row on the road. They've only beaten a couple bad teams this year. And it's been an issue going back for a while. The stat, I believe, is since the Ravens won the Super Bowl at the end of the 2012 season, they are 10-20 on the road. So they have not been a good road team. It's been tough. And so it's hard. The only thing going for them are these are teams that they're used to playing. I mean, it's not like I think they go into Dallas. That's a tough situation for them. You know, if you're not, you know, just a top caliber team. So it's hard for me to see them doing that. I don't know. The fact that they've won four in a row over the Steelers is pretty amazing. They haven't been playing particularly great football over this period of time. But they keep beating the Steelers. You can answer this for me. Aren't the Steelers mad about, aren't they irritated? I mean, enough already, I would say.
Of course they are. And you know, just like last week, very quiet during Bengals week, didn't want to stir things up. The Bengals came out with great energy and dominated the first half of the game. On both lines of scrimmage, really, and the Steelers came back in the second half, and it was completely different. And I think, Mike Tomlin has them very focused. I think it's all business. I'm sure they're embarrassed they've lost four in a row, but Mike is very good at keeping them in the moment and what you got to do this week. So, and they have been such – well, four of these five games that one have been on the road, they have been – when I say they, I should specifically say Ben has been such a different player at home that I'm sure they have a fair bit of confidence.
Yeah, I think they should. And, going back to that run pass thing, I'm sure, Steelers are going to be balanced. They have reason to be balanced with all those nice players. I think you're going to see some empty backfield and, I think they're going to challenge the Ravens and see if it happens. For Antonio Brown.
I think we got a bad cell connection there. John, you hearing us?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're cutting out. You might want to just recap that the last reply there to David.
Okay. I think it remains to be seen. They, I do think that you're going to see the Steelers sort of come out. I mean, it's a question of how they're going to attack the Ravens, but I think the ball's going to be in the air a lot. If I'm the Steelers, I challenge them. You don't want to not give the ball to Le'Veon Bell, obviously. It's such a weapon. But if I'm the Steelers, I say, let's see if Tavon Young and Sharice Wright can cover Antonio Brown. I think the Steelers have to believe they have an advantage there. And I think they're going to see how that plays out because that's a tough one. They're going to be aggressive. Certainly the last quarter in Baltimore, pass happy worked for the Steelers. And if I were them, I would go that direction.
John, real quick on the health of the team. We know about Jimmy Smith. How's the health of the rest of the team?
Pretty good. Surprisingly good. Injuries have been an issue. They had some injuries to major players earlier in the year, Steve Smith, Terrell Suggs. Suggs is playing with a torn biceps and he's playing pretty well. So they're pretty healthy. That would be the biggest one by far is Smith.
Johnny, I take it you're coming up. Are you coming up Christmas Eve?
Actually, I'm going to cover that one from the home office.
Oh, and, good deal.
But I will be writing, that's for sure. So I will definitely be writing that.
Who wins it?
Gosh. Well, my gut tells me Steelers. My gut tells me Steelers win this game. So they certainly, the four in a row is tough. The only thing the Ravens, they've played the Steelers so well. They just play them well time after time after time. So my gut tells me Steelers, it wouldn't surprise me to see this thing come down to the last few minutes. And the Ravens have the best kicker in the league, so it could get interesting.
John, I'm sorry I'm going to miss you on Sunday, but always appreciate the time. And I'd say it's probably 50-50 that we're doing this again in a couple of weeks. So maybe we'll get a chance to talk in the new year.
That'd be great. Look forward to it, if so.
All right, check him out on Twitter, at B-More Eisenberg. He's got a bunch of books out. He's going to have a new one on the streak, Cal Ripken. So if you're making your midsummer Christmas list, make sure you put that on there as well. John, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks as always.
Dave, always fun to talk to John. He's a you know, we can genuinely say now, and I've had the pleasure of meeting him. He's not only a good analyst and a fun guy to talk to, he's become a real friend of the show.
Absolutely. He's like the Steve Martin of the Terrible Podcast. You know, he's the guy that's going to have the most appearances and really, really comfortable talking to him. And look, I mean, you could spend 30 minutes just going over various things with the Ravens, I think, with him during an offseason and where they sit organizationally. Very knowledgeable guy about football, a football historian as well. Really enjoy talking to John. And as always, make John feel welcome. Get on Twitter and tweet at him and tell him how much you appreciate him being on the show. And look at his books on Amazon as well, too, with a week left ahead of Christmas as well, too. David, boy, these shows get longer and longer, I think.
Yeah, hey, by the way, and also it's the holiday season, and if you're looking to give your loved one a house, remember the mortgage process can be sometimes challenging. Our buddy Craig Oxand can guide you through the daunting process, help you score the home of your dreams, even in Baltimore. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig Oxand a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com. You can apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
Follow me on Twitter.
By the way,
go ahead.
Football Outsiders, DVOA. The Steelers have moved up to 3. If you like these statistical things, behind Dallas 1, New England 2, Pittsburgh 3, Atlanta 4. The Steelers in weighted DVOA, which applies weight to the more recent games. The Steelers are now first with New England 2 and Dallas 3. Overall, offensively, the Steelers ranked 10th. They were 8-8 on offense, 8 in defense 2 weeks ago. They were 9 on offense, 9 on defense last week. They're 10th on offense and 9th on defense this week, 13th on special teams. They moved up a little on special teams, believe it or not, obviously because of all the Boswell field goals.
Pray for no David DeCastro penalties this week as well, too, people. Folks, follow me at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up top. Take it right to PayPal. We appreciate all the donations that have come in. We appreciate all the support that we've gotten this year on the show as well, too. David, until Friday.
Yeah, as we seriously do appreciate the donations. It's very kind of you. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.